In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Defying the laws of the universe. Traveling across the globe. Giving up life and liberty. Finding the real people. Finding the truth. This team will stop at nothing to tell your story. Decades in the making. Finding the people behind the ads. Ad Phantom has arrived.
A little over the top?
Yeah, just a little.
Whatever, just roll with it.
All right, here we go.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Ad Phantom Show, brought to you by AdPhantom.com. We appreciate you joining us this episode, and I gotta tell you, I'm scared to death. Why? Well, because our wonderful producers, based on some feedback, decided that we weren't allowed to use the script anymore. They said that I was too scripted, so I'm kind of scared because I love my script. So they've been climbing in our windows and snatching our scripts up. John's happy because John's already hilarious. I'm scared to death about it.
And I'm John.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm Ryan. See, I've already screwed up the script.
Welcome to the Ad Phantom Show.
Unscripted and unedited. John, there's something I saw in the news today that I thought was absolutely hilarious. It made me think of you. Why, I don't know, because you're not missing any limbs. But there's this old man who's going outside or going out to get some lumber or whatever. His 6-ton trailer falls on his toes. And and it's just his toes, right? He should be grateful that a 6-ton trailer falls and it only lands on his toes. He can't reach his cell phone that's in the cab. And he's like, it'll take a while for my wife to recognize that I'm missing in a search party. So I'm going to take my pocket knife out and cut my toes off. And he cut all 5 of his toes off.
That's awesome. Where was this?
I don't know. I want to say somewhere like Idaho.
Yeah, Utah. Probably. That reminds me of a tattoo I saw today. It was a picture of a foot that had the first 2 toes missing, and the tattoo said, "Went to market, be back, the pig." It made me laugh, and I was like,
"Could you imagine the tattoo that this guy could get?" So yeah, I was getting this wood and all, and I don't have any more toes on my right foot.
Oh well.
And the funny thing is, the newspaper was talking about how he was this hero. Like, what kind of hero? He was an idiot. He was an idiot. Within a couple of hours, he's like, wait a couple hours. Oh no, wait, my wife is a complete idiot, and she'll never notice that I'm gone for days. So I'm gonna start. You know what he was really thinking is, he was like, man, the wife is going to be cooking New York strip and eggs tonight. I got to get home. Screw these toes.
I'd cut my toes off for a good ribeye, I think.
I don't know if I would be willing to do that or not.
Maybe my little toe.
I guess you don't really use that one. Sometimes it gets irritating, you know, when you've got shoes that don't fit right. It's always the little toe that gets irritated.
You can wear those sexy high heels you've been hiding in your closet.
That would... Wait a minute. No.
What? Nothing? They don't have to know that. It's good times. So, Ryan, I was reading the newspaper today, and...
Really?
Yes, I can read.
Congratulations.
It was hard. I got through a couple.
Newspapers.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You're reading. Wait,
no.
Before you start,
I'm
reading
the
newspaper.
I'm not reading.
Yeah, who's reading the
newspaper? It was,
you're looking at it on your phone or you're on your computer.
Was, okay. Anyway, Gibson. Did you hear about what happened to Gibson guitars?
No, I didn't. I don't read the newspaper.
Apparently, the government is charging them for trafficking in illegally obtained wood. In the
what?
Use of their guitars. Yeah, I don't really know what that means.
Wait, I bet they were buying it from this guy because he was alone, the guy who the trailer fell on. You know, he was out
right.
getting wood before.
Right, yes.
I bet that's why he was alone. He's like, oh, crap. The authorities are going to find out that I'm supplying Gibson with illegal wood, so I better cut my losses, which happened to be his toes.
Yeah, that's why he had to make his – and that's why he's a hero. Because he's like, look, guys, I found this big trailer of all this illegally obtained wood, guys, but I totally cut my toes off so that it would work.
He was just trying to get a free Gibson. That's what it was.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, man, I got this one for you. I sacrificed my five little piggies on my right foot for you.
Right, but he still has his fingers.
That's true. That's true. You got to have your fingers to play the guitar, which, if you're any good, right? My fingers are too fat or I'm just too dumb. I was never able to play the guitar.
You gotta work on your fingering skills, Ryan.
Absolutely.
That's the trick to guitars.
You're such a terrible person. Yes.
Speaking
yes.
of fingers, I have a really good bacon recipe.
Yes, are they bacon fingers?
Close.
Pork toes? They're called, pork.
It's called pig candy.
Mmm.
Basically what it is it's like a form of candy bacon, but you baste it with some herbs and spices and a little bit of maple syrup during the cooking process. The recipe's online. You can check it out there. You can also go on there and you can submit your recipes, and if I like them and I make them, we'll put them on the show and we'll give you some credit there. It should be pretty good. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, definitely. That should be a lot of fun. We'll work on getting some sweepstakes and some free stuff from our sponsors and partners and see what we can get.
What do we got on the show today, Ryan?
Today we're talking with some mortgage brokers and bank representatives regarding the housing market crisis.
That sounds great. And,
It's a pretty serious topic, but we are going to have some great advice for how we can do refinancing and save some money. So it should be good. Well worth the time.
I'm excited.
And then after that, we're talking to The Brocks, a band from Provo, Utah.
Right on. Well, I'm looking forward to it. It should be a good show.
It should be. We'll be right back after this short break, and you'll get more of John and Ryan, because I know you can't wait for it.
All up in your ear hole. This has been an exciting time here at Ad Phantom.
As you know, we're doing our best to bring down the impersonal nature of the internet when it comes to buyer and seller. And we work hard to find small businesses, large corporations, entrepreneurs with a great idea, and especially artists trying to get out to the public.
Just recently, we've hit some great milestones.
Absolutely, John. This idea of finding the real people behind the ads has caught the attention of some of the bigger, well-known groups. We're proud to announce that Ad Phantom has now partnered with Apple, Barnes & Noble, Groupon, Logitech, Newegg, just to name a few.
That's right, and through these partnerships, we're able to offer you weekly specials and even some daily deals through our website that gives you the access to these deals that you may not find elsewhere.
Not only do we offer great deals, but by purchasing through us, you help support Ad Phantom so that we can continue to bring you more great content.
Are you in a band looking to promote your music? Are you a small business owner trying to reach a larger market? We can help.
In tackling the impersonal nature of the interwebs, we're looking to promote the real people.
To contact us, you just need to visit our website and click the link appropriately titled Contact Us. It's at the top right of the page.
AdPhantom.com, finding the people behind the ads. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Today's topic is one that hits home for a lot of Americans, no pun intended. The housing market has been a mess since 2008 and hasn't seen any major improvements. Joining us this segment are two very knowledgeable guests. John?
That's right, Ryan. With us today, we have Michael Grant. He's a licensed real estate broker since 1976, so he's got a lot of experience. He's a licensed mortgage broker since 1985. After 5 years of working in various institutions, he started AmeriBank Mortgage in 1990. He is married and is the father of six beautiful children. With us, we also have Tyler. And he has a BS in business administration and a master's in finance focusing on accounting. He's worked in consumer finance for about 3 years now with two large national consumer lending companies. He has experience with loan restructures and loss mitigation in the past. He's been married to his lovely wife for about 6.5 years and has 1 2-year-old.
Thank you so much for joining us, Michael and Tyler.
You're welcome.
It's great to be here.
The root cause of the housing crisis is still fairly cloudy for the general public, and I personally feel that it is designed that way. Tyler, in your opinion, where does the majority of the responsibility belong for the housing market crash?
You know, it falls to a couple different places. In my experience where I've worked, I've seen and heard several opinions. My personal belief is it goes back to you know, President Clinton, sorry for those Democrats out there, but, you know, there was a big initiative that every American should have a home. Every American deserved to be in a home. It was a right to have. And so they made lending guidelines to pretty much meet that criteria. And what we saw was there were many people who didn't have what I like to call the fiscal responsibility to really maintain proper homeownership. You can't treat your mortgage like you treat a credit card. You know, my personal experience was I would say probably 80% of the people who faced foreclosures, whatever their situation may be, would put their home, their mortgage payment behind something else. I don't think the government's necessarily to blame. I think it was a list of factors from the government to mortgage brokers, mortgage lenders, and the people themselves.
Michael, you've been in the mortgage industry for 27 years. Do you agree with Tyler?
Yeah, I do. I agree a lot of what Tyler has said. I think what I would add to that is I really feel that the government was very instrumental in starting this whole meltdown. Bill Clinton wanted us to have the right for everybody to have a home. Barney Frank and Chris Dodd went to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and said, "Hey, guys, you don't have loans for poor people." And we said, "There's a reason for that. They're poor. They can't afford them." They said, "We'll fix it." So we did. We came out with loan programs for them. Then they came along and said, "You guys don't have loan programs for people with poor credit." We said, "Well, there's a reason for that. They got bad credit. They don't pay their bills. They're not good credit risk." And we were told to fix it. So we did. The only reason that that worked with the subprime loan products that we had was because as these people were eventually defaulting on their loans, the property values were on an express elevator going up. When they were foreclosed on, the lenders made money until finally we reached a point where the values and properties were up so high that nobody could afford them, and this whole house of cards came crashing down on us. Another part I think that contributed to this a lot that has been overlooked was greed on the part of the consumer. A lot of consumers aren't going to like to hear this, but you know, we've been raising generation after generation of people since the 60s with an entitlement mentality. Everybody wants everything now. They don't want to earn it like our parents did. They wanted the big homes. They wanted the big cars. They wanted the big screen TVs. So they went out and they did whatever it took to get it. They used and took advantage of the stated incomes, stated asset loan programs. We in the industry have called them liar's loans for years. We all knew that they were giving us fallacious information, but hey, we were told to do these. These loan programs were all approved by the powers to be. I think it's something else that wasn't looked at here was if you really go back into the mid-90s when interest rates came down to probably their first real low peak, the builders realized that now people could get bigger loans, so they could charge more for their homes. The real estate agents realized, well, gee, now we can bring up the values of our resale homes and we can sell them for more. The sellers realized, wow, now I can get more for my home. So this whole thing just kind of fed on itself, again, until they drove values up so high that nobody could afford them and it crashed down on us. So we're all to blame.
Right. Michael, you had touched on it previously, and it's no secret that it's increasingly more difficult to get a loan these days, even if you have good credit. Why do you think that is, Michael?
The investors that buy these loans, that's something a lot of people don't understand, is it doesn't matter whether you're a direct lender, a mortgage banker, whether you're a bank, whether you're a mortgage broker, we all get our money from the same place. It's Wall Street, just to kind of make it simple for everybody. Investors buy these loans. Well, the investors are scared to death right now. A phenomenon has happened that has never, ever happened before. And that phenomenon is people no longer look at a home as a pride of ownership. They look at a home as a financial investment. And they've watched that investment go upside down. Well, they no longer feel any moral ethics or ethics of any kind that they have an obligation to pay this money back. I get calls from people all the time asking me to help them to get out of their house, and they want to go buy another one, and they're just going to walk away from the mortgage they have right now. And the very first question I ask these people is, if you'd borrow this money from your parents or your grandparents, would you just screw them? Would you walk away from that obligation? Unfortunately, all too often, that answer is yeah. And then I ask them, well, what kind of car do you own? Oh, I've got a Mercedes, or I've got a Beamer, or I've got a Caddy, or whatever. And then I remind them, when you bought that car and you drove it off the lot, the value dropped 35% as soon as you hit the street. Are you now going to walk away from it because your car lost its value just like your house did?
Tyler, do you think that's accurate?
You know, I think that is accurate. People got in the habit, you know, as well, you know, flipping their homes and moving from home to home quickly because they were making a profit, and then they crashed and they were stuck with a home that either they didn't like because they were planning on moving up, or something that wasn't, you know, what they felt was what they really wanted. And you know, and the biggest problem with getting approved for a new home loan, even trying to get into a lower interest rate that I've seen, is the home values just aren't there anymore because of the foreclosures on the market. And so it's driving home values down.
I have want to turn the table just a little bit. When you buy a car, you know that it's going to depreciate in value. That's just a given. Whether it's new or used, it is going to lose value. But you, when you buy a house, you're buying it as an investment. So if you look at it from, let's say, a business investment standpoint, morally, you want to pay your loan back because you made an agreement. But if you invest in a business and the business loses value and you decide that you want to get out of that investment, you really don't have that option. You can't go to the bank and say, hey, you know what? My house is really only worth this much right now. It's only worth half of what I paid for it. So let's readjust how much we're going to pay for that. So looking at it from that angle, how do you juggle the morality with a business investment, Mike?
You can't look at it as a business investment. That's a fallacy, Ryan, that's been perpetrated on us by the real estate community for many, many years. In the 27 years I've been doing this, I've been through four of these downturns. For example, when I bought my house in 1989, it had gone up quite a bit by 1991. By 1993, I was $100,000 of value I had lost in my home, and it stayed there for 10 years. It wasn't actually until about 2002 or 3 when the value of my home came back up to what I had paid for it. We've got to stop looking at everything as being an investment, because even if you are a businessman, the only way you're going to walk away from a business that's not doing well is you're going to either, one, lose everything you put into it and file bankruptcy. You could do the same thing with your home also, but unfortunately, people are walking away from their homes without filing bankruptcy. We have what's called a deficiency clause in every mortgage we do these days, except for what we call a purchase money mortgage. That would be the mortgage that you used when you originally bought your home. Once you've refinanced your home, you no longer have the safety of being able to walk away from it and not having a deficiency filed against you. So most of these people who during this meltdown period use these, I'm going to use the term subprime loans because that's what most of people went through, because they were, again, stated income, stated asset. They were using their house like an ATM machine, taking tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, in many cases, of the equity out of their home. They got the benefit of this money, and then they just turn around and walk away from it. Many lenders are filing deficiency judgments against these people unless laws are preventing them. And unfortunately, our current administration did pass some laws that's preventing that to happen. And the downside to this, when somebody walks away from it and doesn't pay it, is you're not hurting the bank. You're hurting the investor that owns that mortgage, which could be a retirement fund, your 401k plan. It could be your mom and dad or anybody that owns mortgage-backed securities. So you're hurting other people. It's not as though you're hurting the big evil bank. That's not the case at all.
Tyler.
You know, as coming from the banking industry, like Michael said, it depends on who owns the mortgage. You know, and he's right. A lot of these mortgages get traded. He used the term big bad bank, but you know, it's sometimes you do hurt the bank. You hurt the lenders that are holding those loans, because then they have a default on those loans. And you know, overall, I agree with that. You're not just hurting the investors and hurting Wall Street. It's a cycle. You're hurting them. You're hurting the bank. You're hurting that local lender if they're the ones who hold that loan. In turn, you're hurting them as a whole. Then you're hurting individuals. You know, if enough people defaulted on their loans, I could lose my job again. I went through a layoff with one of the companies I was with. You can affect individuals in your community, and you can also affect the big picture as a whole.
Now, how did that, as far as the whole picture of the housing market, affect you personally in your career?
The company I was with was losing a lot of money. It was the company I was doing a lot of loss mitigation for, specifically, 90% being home loans. And, you know, the company I was working for at that time, I'm not going to lie to you guys, they were charging ridiculous interest rates on home loans. They were lending to just about anybody and everybody, regardless of credit, prior bankruptcies, income, you know, like Michael's saying, we were giving money to everybody.
And this was a major branch, major banking.
This was
branch.
A major company. I can say that. I don't want to say much more just to...
No, that's fine.
I'd point myself, but
we're not talking about a small town banking.
No, this is not a small town bank. I mean, this is one of the top five banks in the nation that I used to work for, world multinational bank.
Interesting.
Yeah, their consumer loan division. You know, there was a point, you know, end of 2008, all of 2009, I was going through three or four foreclosures a month. dealing with people on an individual basis, negotiating short sales, subordinations, working with people that were trying to walk away from it. And because of the losses that company was taking, they issued a nationwide layoff of, you know, thousands of people, hundreds of branches in local areas. You know, a lot.
So they mess up and you have to foot the bill, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. I had to foot the bill by losing my job. So
that's terrible. Mike, you've had your own business since 1990. What kind of hits did you guys take?
You know, we had to take some pretty big hits. Something that the public doesn't understand is we mortgage brokers, mortgage bankers, even the banks that sell their loans. We all have buyback agreements with the investors we sell these loans to. You know, there's not enough money for any bank to hold the majority of the loans that they do, or any mortgage banker to hold them. We're usually selling most of them off onto Wall Street. But when somebody defaults on their loans, if enough of our loans get defaulted on, then we get cut off from the investors we sold them to. They come back and then demand that we buy back those loans, which in essence can put us out of business, which in essence, again, requires, just like with Tyler, we have to lay people off. We have to let good employees go. It devastates us in our business. A lot of the public just thinks that, okay, you know, I'm walking away from it and I'm hurting the bank, but they're hurting an awful lot of people when they walk away from these mortgages.
Some of our fans and my personal friends and family have had issues with their home situation. I'll share a quick story. This individual's house was purchased for, I think, around $450K. They had an adjustable rate mortgage, but they never missed a payment. The bank decided to up their payment to where they couldn't afford it anymore. They tried to refinance and try and get it for $300. The bank said no. They foreclosed and auctioned off the house at the courthouse for $170,000. Now, okay. Any kindergartner can do the math, and it seems that both parties missed out. Now, come on. We know that the banks aren't stupid. So, Tyler, how does the bank make up that lost money?
They really don't. You know, if a short sale, which is what you just described as a prime example of a short sale that had gone to auction rather than having it sit on the market. When you have a house that the bank owns, people are out of it, it's sitting on the market, you know, you have to have either everything winterized so you're not having to pay utilities.
But what's the motivation? I mean, they could meet their payment beforehand. Why does the bank say, well, you know what? I know that you can pay for this. You have been paying for it. But you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and take your house and sell it for half that amount because, you know, I want to up your rate. Well, it just doesn't make any sense. It seems very stupid from a business standpoint. So my thing is, and what I've heard other people want to know is there a, you know, a tax? Do they get a tax break by doing that? Is there an insurance policy? Or, you know, where are they making up the money for that?
Well,
otherwise, there's no motivation.
Well, you know, if they were paying mortgage insurance, they're going to recoup some of their losses from a mortgage insurance policy that's out there. You know, generally what happens in that situation, like you were describing, the thing with an adjustable rate mortgage is they're great. They are great products if you plan on paying your home off quick. But most of them are designed that you get a price break for a certain amount of time in your mortgage, whether you're on a 30-year or 15-year mortgage, whatever that may be. And when you hit that, what it sounds like in that situation is they were on a balloon payment. Balloon payments are a notorious program where what it is you pay pretty much interest only for the first period of your loan, and it's set in your terms, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, whatever it is, that's set. And then after that time, when you're paying just interest, a very, very minimal amount of what your payment is, there's still all this principal due that you have to pay off. And if you do a 30-year mortgage with a balloon payment after 10 years, you're now having to pay a 30-year mortgage off in 20 years. It may seem that all of a sudden it went up, but then you lose home value, so you're not able to refinance at a lower rate or a payment you can afford. The balloon loans were a really unfortunate situation because it was a great way to get people who couldn't afford a really nice expensive house into a really nice expensive house because they weren't planning on staying in it for 5 to 10 years.
Michael, do you agree with that? Is that accurate?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what he's saying there. You know, I wish I could answer the question and say, is it fair? You have to look at it from the point of the bank and the individual. You just can't say for each situation out there that there's a cut and dried answer for all of it. Unfortunately, there are people out there who haven't made payments on their homes for a year or two. I know people that have been in them for the last 2+ years and have not made a payment on their mortgage. There was one lady here was on the news recently that had been living in her home for over 20 years and had not made a payment on it and was able to manipulate the system to stay in there. The problem with it is the bank takes a look at it and says, you haven't made a payment in 2 years. I'm going to continue with these losses. I might as well get rid of you and put somebody else in there that hopefully will continue to make the payments. They're going to take a look at your employment situation and how secure your job is. if they don't feel comfortable with the security of your job, they may not want to work with you.
Right. Well, see, that all makes sense. Let me interrupt you. That all makes sense if someone can't afford it on a, you know, a normal standpoint where they've lost their job, they're not getting more work, they're, you know, it just doesn't look bright for them. But let's take somebody who is not in that situation. They've got a job, they're getting paid a decent amount, and they're able to make their current payments. Why is the bank unwilling to work with them as far as what they can and can't pay? Why would the bank rather take a loss than work with that homeowner?
Most of these loans were cut up into little tiny pieces and sold off to multiple entities. No one person bought that entire loan. It was chopped up. Now you've got to get each person who owns a portion of this loan to agree to what you're trying to do. If you can't get one of them to agree to what you're trying to do, the whole thing falls apart. And that's been a major problem. Parts of these loans could be owned by people living in different countries even. And this is one of the reasons why these loan modifications were taking so long to try and get done, if we could get them done at all. Another problem was during this bank meltdown, the federal government took over a lot of these banks. When they took over these banks and financial institutions, we now had people that didn't care about anything other than getting these things off the books. That's all they cared about, get rid of them. And so people were foreclosed on. They didn't want to work with them. We found that that was a major problem within those institutions where the federal government came in and took over the institutions.
You know, with these individuals that do have great jobs and are able to pay their bills, Tyler, why do you think the banks are so unwilling to work with some people in that situation?
Like Michael said, I mean, it comes down to who owns the loan and the programs that are out there. And, you know, what people fail to realize is the banks are lending money to make money. And that's why people refer to them as, you know, the big bad bank. They have deposits that they're taking in. They're lending money based off those deposits. At some point in time, someone's going to come in and say, I want the money out of my account. And if it's not there, then, you know, what do you tell that customer? And so what happens is, you know, the bank says, we've made money to cover what we have deposited if we sell it for a certain amount. And that's part of it is people need to realize they went in there with a set loan term. And I understand the loan terms may not have been explained to some people to the extent where they understood them clearly. And that's the fault of whoever did their loan. And, you know, as someone who does those type of loans, that is a very sad situation, one that, you know, I personally try not to have to deal with because I hate having to explain to people, well, that's what you signed. And I hate having to have a conversation with that people as well. Let's look at your loan documents. Here's where it says this is exactly what's going to happen. And they had no clue because it was never explained to them.
Okay, so that we can establish that a lot of different parties are at fault. A lot of people screwed up. There was a lot of misconception here. So then the government steps in and they want to help you out. So I've got another fan story real quick here. Similar situation where they had to short sale their house because the mortgage payment went up. She was told over and over by the bank that there was a plan implemented by Obama that could help their foreclosure situation. However, they never fit into the housing relief plan. So Tyler, who actually qualifies for this supposed house relief program?
It varies. There was a home relief plan. Each institution had to develop something within the guidelines of this home relief plan. So each one's kind of different depending on what institution your loan is through. I've dealt with these government plans, you know, and this goes off to a way other topic, but people who are already manipulating the system, who are on Social Security and, you know, may be able to have a job, on disability, who should be able to work, on welfare, people who are in that cycle already seem to be the ones that qualified for these programs, where people who had jobs, were working hard, they were paying their bills, we should have been able to help them, the government should have been there to help them, didn't seem to fit the bill because either they were making too much money, you know, their credit was too good, it hadn't been affected yet, or they had too many other assets. And what it really came down to is, whatever you made, say you made $60,000 a year, so that's $5,000 a month that you were making. The government said, well, you know, we're going to get your house payment to fit into 30% of whatever that is. So 30% of your monthly income should be your house payment. You know, if you had a $5,000 house payment, 30% of that would be $1,500. Does that sound right?
Close enough.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. As long as we're close enough on agreement, that's good with me. So your house payment should be $1,500. They don't care what you're paying on your car payment. They don't care what you're paying for credit cards. They don't care about anything else, what other debt you have. That's what it is. And generally what you're seeing is people who had a job that weren't on some kind of assistance program, had a home that fit within their budget. That's where being fiscally responsible with your income and having a good budget. And I found a lot of people who were working had already taken the steps to make sure that's where they were.
Well, that doesn't seem like much of a relief plan to me. Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Tyler, everything he said. I did quite a few of these loan modifications. And the sad part about it is I can't tell you the number of people that I counseled in this that they had house payments that were 45 to 50% of their income. Even though Tyler said the banks don't care about what your other payments are, your car payments or whatever, they don't really care as far as, yeah, you got them, and guess what? Your total debt ratios are way out of sight. There's just no way you're going to be able to continue to do this. And the sad part about this, Ryan, was that 90% of all loan modifications that were done, whether they were done by the bank, whether they were under one of the federal guideline programs or what have you.
What percentage? Say that again. What percentage?
90% of all 90%. Loan modifications. 90% of all loan modifications were back requesting for another one within 6 to 12 months.
Oh, man.
The entire program failed.
Tyler, go ahead.
I was going to say I totally agree with that figure. I don't have exact figures, but in my experience, if we did a modification for someone before these government programs came into place, as soon as they heard there was a government program, they were right back in there to try and do it again.
I've got something that's kind of – sorry to interrupt. I've got something that's kind of – it's a story of a friend of mine. They had to short sale their house because the bank wouldn't even work with them. They said that their credit was going to take a major hit, and it's been a year, and their credit's just where it was. And they would qualify for a new home except that all these new FHA regulations say that they can't qualify for another 3 years. How does 3 years help that situation? Michael, do you think this regulation has a goal for actually market recovery?
Absolutely. These regulations aren't new. These regulations have been around for a long, long time. And the reason for this, again, is the experience has shown that people who get into trouble get back into another loan. You can have a bankruptcy or a foreclosure, and there's different programs to get you in right away. Matter of fact, FHA's got a program where if you had a Chapter 13 bankruptcy and you've been making payments on it, you can go out and buy another house within a year. The sad thing about that is most of those people end up in the same situation again. With Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, their programs now, which used to be 4 years, have now gone out to 5 years. And the reason for this is experience has shown, for whatever reason, what used to work 10 years ago doesn't work with the public today.
Tyler, do you agree with this? Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, I mean, the market's changed dramatically in home values, lending practices, people who used to qualify that can't, loans that you don't even offer anymore. I mean, the company I worked for before I was laid off, I started right before this all came about 6 months before, early spring of May 2008. And we, you know, like I said, we were lending to everybody. We had every type of product available, from first mortgages, second mortgages. We were doing home equity loans, home equity lines of credit, anything we could against a person's home, because it used to be seen as an investment. And like Michael said, I mean, that's a fallacy. It's your home isn't an investment. You're not guaranteed anything because it all depends on what the market is. And so you were seeing people who, in essence, had a first mortgage, a second mortgage, and then a third mortgage in terms of a home equity line of credit behind that. And people were going to 125, 150% loan to value. And this was all 3 years ago, because you were seeing such dramatic skyrockets in values, in home values, that they felt justified in being able to go to 125% on your loan to value.
So do you think it's all just basically a result of people not having any kind of personal accountability then?
I think that's a big part of it. Getting off topic, this isn't just, you know, with home loans. I think, and this is a personal opinion, I think society as a whole has lost that personal accountability that our parents' generation had. Michael touched on that, you know, people who felt that they were entitled to certain things without having to put in the hard work to get those things. You know, a lot of keeping up with the Joneses. Well, my next door neighbor has all this cool stuff. He's got the 60-inch plasma. He's got, you know, the boats, the RVs, the four-wheelers, you know, all those toys that everybody wants to have so they can have a great time on the weekend. That you see your neighbors have those, and he may have a job where he can afford those payments, but everyone else wants to have them too, so they go out and they buy them on credit. And I think we're seeing effects not just in the home markets, but I think it's a effect that's going across the banking industry, to be honest.
Another bad thing about this whole mess here is that there are a lot of scams now. Michael, you are in the mortgage business and you see them all the time. What kind of scams should we be aware of and look out for?
Well, are you talking about financing? Are you talking about purchasing? Give me some idea of what kind of scams you're talking about.
Let's go with refinancing first. I want to refinance my home, and I hear on the radio that I can get a great rate if I go with them. As a consumer, where should I say, hey, that's a bunch of crap, or, oh, I should definitely call those guys?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head right there. The consumer needs to shop, in my opinion, 10, 15, 20 lenders and keep a chart of what he's told by every lender. If you were to call 20 lenders, I guarantee you here's exactly what you're going to find. You're going to find 10 of those lenders are right grouped together. And then you're going to find 10 lenders, or excuse me, 5 of those lenders are higher than everybody else that you've talked to. You're going to throw them away right now because they're just trying to get into your back pocket. You're going to find 5 lenders are quoting you lower than everybody else. Well, you better throw them away too, because there's no free lunch out there. We all get our money from the same place. Wall Street sets the interest rates. We're all going to be fairly close, although like any business, you can manipulate it higher if you want to. But when you've got 10 people quoting you right around the middle, that's reality. Everybody that's trying to lowball you, they're lowballing you for one reason, and that's because they know when they get you in the door, they get your application, and you're 5 days before you have to close escrow on that purchase. You don't have time to go look anywhere else, and they're going to come up to you and they're going to say, hey, I'm sorry, John Q. Public, but you don't qualify for that loan program. For whatever reason, here's what you're going to have to go with, and you're stuck. The same thing has been happening notoriously on the internet. Most of us in the industry call all these internet websites and all these people that get all their business on the internet just a liar's yellow pages, because if you're in a 5%...
Hey now, we're an internet business. We're as honest as the honest as they come. You go to our reviews, we're going to give you an honest review, whether it's good or not, whether we would make, 200% or 5%. We're going to tell you what we think.
Don't get me
so
wrong.
Be careful now.
No, I'm not saying everybody in the internet business is in the liar's yellow pages. I'm saying people in the finance industry are in the liar's yellow
pages. I'll agree with you there. Just got to, defend my peeps, yo.
When you're in a 5% world and you're quoting 4% interest rates, the bells and whistles should be going, alarms should be going off inside their head. But instead, they feel, well, hey, you couldn't be advertising if it wasn't real. And I can't tell you the number of people that go with somebody else after I've counseled them what to do, and then they give me a call up and say, Michael, you were right. What can you do to help me? And I said, well, when are you supposed to close escrow? And they say, next Monday, when this happens to be Friday. And I go, well, I'm sorry. I can't help you unless you can get a 30-day extension or something.
For the first time, home buyers who might assume they can't get a new house because of the market, what advice would you give them?
Not to sound too hip-hop, John, but I tell them to jiggity-check themselves before they wreck themselves, because, I mean,
Say that again.
You know, I would tell them to jiggity-check themselves before they wreck themselves.
So Ice Cube is the man we need to look for fiscal advice as far as first-time homebuyers go? Is that
if you want to get some fiscal advice on how to make money, I would definitely want to get Ice Cube on this program, because let's the issue is, if you don't think you can get a nice home, then you must live in a really nasty neighborhood, because my personal experience, and this just isn't where I live, this is, statewide, this is region-wide, as you spread out, people are walking away from homes. We talked about it. Banks are willing to settle for way less than what that home is worth. If you don't think you can afford a home based on what it is, I would tell you to go to your realtor or go to a realty office. Doesn't matter which one. You can pick whichever major one you want and ask for a list of foreclosures and say, what do you have on the list that's foreclosures? Who do you have that deals with short sales? And find someone who has experience with that. And like Michael said, find a couple people, shop around and find someone that you feel is really trust, that you may have had friends that worked with. Don't feel like you can't ask people for advice on who you should go see. I mean, I can tell you, my market is skewed than from, where I know John's from. Michael, I'm not sure exactly where you're at in the country. If you had a home that was $250,000, I've seen those homes go for $180,000. I've seen $200,000 homes go for $120,000, $130,000, because banks want to get money and get them off the market, so get them off the books.
Michael, is there anything you'd like to add to that really quick?
You know, what I would add to it is, before I would send somebody to a realtor, I would tell them they need to go to their mortgage lender. They need to get themselves pre-approved for a loan amount that they know they can qualify for. And then for a loan type, based on their particular financials, their credit, their down payment, and stuff like that, you can't start looking for a house first before you get approved for a mortgage. Just putting the horse in front of the cart. You're doing it just backwards that way. The other advice, and real estate people aren't going to love what I'm going to say right now, but if I've got a first-time home buyer that's coming to me and he doesn't think he can get a decent home, I'm going to tell him, don't buy now. It is not the time. You know, earlier you asked me why it's so difficult to get a loan right now, why investors aren't doing things. Well, part of the reason for this is property values have been going down since 2007. They're continuing to go down. Most of the people in the industry think that we're going to see a substantial drop in prices over the next 5 years. This thing's not over with yet. Personally, unless you just absolutely can get a phenomenal steal on a home, I don't think right now is the time to buy them. Now, that doesn't sound like good advice coming from somebody who depends on you buying a home in order to make some money, put you into a loan. But if you're that close to not being able to qualify for a house, don't push it right now, not in this economic environment. If you're well qualified, you've got a good secure job, you can still get good prices. As Tyler said, you can get steals on homes. Now, he asked me, where am I at? I'm in California. I had a client call me today. He had a $690,000 balance on his loan. The short sale on his house, $260,000.
Ouch.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Ouch.
Wow.
So then as a first-time buyer, the biggest recommendation would be wait a little bit. Make sure that you're not getting into something that you can't afford now. Make sure you're pre-qualified before you get there, and just wait. Find something that really fits you perfectly. Don't fight to get a new house just because it happens to work right now.
Yeah, those pre-approvals are such a big deal.
Okay, real quick, I want to get into refinancing as well. So we touched on the new home buyer. What about refinancing? Mike, is it a good idea for someone to refinance? Is it something they should just wait for? What do you think in 30 seconds?
30 seconds, oh boy, that's a tough one. You know what? First thing you have to take a look at is how long you're going to keep the home, because you're going to have closing costs in doing this refinance. If the difference in the payments divided by the payment, okay, if you got a $5,000, if it's going to cost you $5,000 and you're only going to save $50 a month, it's going to take you, what, 100 months to break even on that? Doesn't make any sense. If you're going to save a couple $300 a month, then yeah, as long as you're going to keep the home longer than it will take to amortize out the difference in the payments, then you will start seeing the benefits of refinancing. I didn't refinance my home for quite a few years because it didn't make sense. I would not wait now for interest rates to get any lower. They're the lowest we've ever seen. The chances of them going much lower are probably going to be slim to none. So don't wait for lower interest rates if it makes sense.
All right, Tyler, do you agree?
I do agree with Mike on that. Interest rates are at a historic low. From being in the banking industry, I can say there are banks out there that are offering no closing cost refis. Generally, you're going to see a little bit higher interest rate than going with a traditional mortgage that has a closing cost, but you can still save a lot. And if that's the case, then you can save a lot of money and you're taking out of play what Michael was talking about there. But those aren't few and far between. But generally, my experience is you have to have pretty good credit and you have to have really good equity in your home. And like Michael was saying, the rates are at historic lows. And if it's in your best interest now to do that, you want to jump on it before they go up. It's only if it makes sense. And like Michael said, if you're planning on staying in your home for a long period of time, that now is generally the time you want to refinance.
All right, well, we're running out of time, but in closing, Tyler, I want to know, what do you think has to be done in order to fix this housing market crisis?
I think the biggest thing that has to be done is we need to have some personal accountability. Washington needs to have some personal accountability. Homeowners need to have some personal accountability. Banks, lenders, mortgage brokers, whoever does your loans needs to have some personal accountability, needs to step up and say, hey, you know what? We can't make the type of loans we used to. We're starting to see institutions do that. Banks have tightened their lending guidelines. That's a fact. And banks are on the right track. We have a government that's out of control on spending. We have people that still have this, you know, entitlement. I deserve everything. I don't have to work for it. I don't have to earn it. I think part of the problem is being addressed, but we are not even close on these other two fronts. And it's going to take a real attitude shift, I think, from people in general to make sure those other two areas get addressed.
Michael, what do we have to do to fix this mess?
Well, I agree with everything that Tyler said. The next thing that's going to fix this mess, and the only thing that's going to fix this mess, is jobs. we have to put people back to work. Until we can get people back to work, we got to get manufacturing back in this country. Here we're going to get into the politics of this whole thing a little bit. If we can't put people back to work in this country, then they're not going to have the money in order to buy homes. Until people start buying homes, it's not going to turn around. And I mean buying homes en masse. A little bit that's going on right now isn't helping. It's like the automobile industry. They're barely hanging on by the skin of their teeth because people aren't buying enough cars. And they're not buying because they're not securing their jobs. Or some people just, they don't have a job. So we've got to get the job situation taken care of first. Once we've got that taken care of, people will feel comfortable. They will stop, I don't want to say hoarding their money, but they'll stop saving, keeping it in their back pocket. The next thing we have to do is we've got to get people trained to stop living on plastic. You know, we've become credit card junkies, and people are so much into debt that the least little thing that happens to them in their life causes a tragedy financially for them, and that's contributed a lot to this meltdown.
I'll tell you what, guys, I got a proposal for all this, but it's time for my vacation, so when I get back, I'm going to reveal it so you guys can all hear it. Well, actually, unfortunately, that is all the time we have today. We appreciate your opinions and advice, and we're all hoping for a speedy recovery. Thanks again for joining us, Michael and Tyler.
Thanks a lot,
guys. Thank you, guys.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, the comments in this section are the opinions of our guests, and we always recommend you talk with a local professional to discuss your unique situation.
We'll be right back after this.
Hey, John, you're in school, right?
Yep.
Did you have to buy textbooks this year?
I sure did. $400 worth, and I only bought 3 books so far.
Ouch. Well, I've got some good news for you, and I hope it's not too late.
Awesome. What's up?
Ad Phantom just paired up with Barnes & Noble, and now we're able to offer some great online deals like up to 90% off used textbooks or up to 30% off and free shipping on new textbooks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, even get up to 60% off of downloadable e-textbooks.
Right on.
There are even more back-to-school deals that you can find by visiting adphantom.com.
I imagine I can just go to the homepage and search for Barnes or Noble at the top of the search bar, right?
That's absolutely right.
I'm definitely going to check that out for the rest of my books. Adphantom.com. Find the people behind the ads.
Oh, the night. Oh, still. Oh. Over still, over night, it was over still, it was over night, over still.
Let's take a little walk and we'll listen on the way.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this segment of the Ad Phantom Show, where we're talking with a new and up-and-coming band. Joining us this segment is the new band, The Brox. Formed just this year in Provo, Utah, The Brox have been busy playing in venues all over Utah and Idaho. Named after the original founders of their band, their music is a blend of catchy melodies and simple instrumentation that is modern and fresh with a nostalgic feel. With Dane and Grant Brock on vocals, keyboard, guitar, and bass, Derek Cheney on guitar, and Matt Woodland on drums, ladies and gentlemen, The Brox.
All right, guys. So my first question is for Dane. Can you tell us a little bit about how the band got started?
Yeah, well, my brother and I have done music together our whole lives, even had a family band back home. So after he got back from Africa, we just wanted to play together.
Africa? What was he doing in Africa?
Yeah, he was a missionary.
Oh, okay.
Right on.
Derek, can you share with us one of your favorite moments that you've had with the Brox?
Yeah, well, one time we played up in Rexburg, and there's a bunch of people who had never really heard about us besides online. They just saw that we were playing. And so they found our songs online, and some people ended up coming to the show even knowing some of our words. And that was a really cool experience, considering the level of band we are right now and where we're at. It was a really gratifying experience.
That's actually pretty cool. So when you were in Rexburg, where did you guys play at?
We play at Sammy's quite a bit at Rexburg. That's the place to be up in Rexburg.
Right on. I used to live up there, and maybe 3 years ago, some friends of mine and I, we found this basement space that we turned into a kind of a nightclub scene that we would have bands come through, and it may or may not have been legal and may or may not have got shut down, but it was good times. It was good times while it lasted. This question's for Matt. Matt, what would you say is your biggest inspiration for the band's music?
I don't know. It just kind of relaxes me, and it's just like one of the funnest things to do. Playing in front of people, giving them a good show, I guess.
What was it like your first time playing on stage in front of an audience full of fans?
It was crazy, just dancing. There's dancing and stuff, and I don't know, I never really felt that before.
Dane, if I can ask you, what's your biggest musical influence?
Oh my gosh, my biggest? Well, probably my dad. He was in a pretty good 70s rock band in Oregon called Brew.
Right on.
And they opened for BTO back in the day, so we've always had house. Yeah.
So, Derek, can we expect any new album releases soon?
Well, actually, we're talking about releasing a compilation right now of several different singles that we've been working on in the studio as of late. So really what we're doing at this stage is just releasing singles every now and again, and then we'll have a compilation at our shows that fans can purchase there too.
Excellent. How often do you plan to release a new track?
We're talking about once a month, sticking to that schedule. And so for the next couple of months, we have a lot of really sweet new stuff that we've been working on.
Awesome. Okay, I got the biggest question all of our fans want to know. This is to each of you. You can each answer. We'll start with Dane. Who is your favorite Disney princess?
Favorite Disney princess, Sleeping Beauty.
Sleeping Beauty. Derek?
I'd have to go with Belle on this one.
Belle, I agree. That's a good one. Matt, how about yourself?
Cinderella.
Cinderella. All right. I think those are pretty diverse tastes.
I'm pretty sure Grant is Jasmine. I'm such
right
a safe bet.
That's good to know. I'm sure all of your fans will be excited to know you can.
Most important question of the night.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Visit AdPhantom.com to find out more about the Brocks and where you can find their music as well as live shows that they're playing in this month in Utah and Idaho. The day after our recording, Michael Grant called to inform me that one of the larger private mortgage insurance companies, PMI, had lost all of its stock value and was going out of business. It seems that all those sly institutions looking for an insurance policy payout after a foreclosure ended up with yet another backfired plan. Special thanks to all our guests, to Cody, our associate producer, and all the staff here at Ad Phantom. We once again thank you for joining us and hope you enjoyed the show. Are you in a band or have a great show idea? We love feedback, so please visit our website, www.adphantom.com. Leave a comment, become our Facebook fan, follow us on Twitter, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Also, don't forget to look at our daily product deals. We'll now close with one of our favorite tracks from our musical guest. Start of day two.
Ad Phantom, finding the people behind the ads.